This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Yannick Manga.
And I'm Luc-Olivier Dumeblé.
And what's our topic this week?
Side projects.
Interesting. So before we get into the main topic, we have some follow-up.
Obviously.
Yeah, I have some follow-up all the way back to episode 12. On episode 12, I mentioned a blog post on the Facebook engineering blog about how Facebook's application became so untenably large that it would refuse to run on modern Android phones, so they had to resort to a pile of hacks to get their app to work. And this week, another company joined the too-big-to-run-on-Android club, and that is SoundCloud. They announced that they have over 65,536 methods in their application now, and they are writing a blog post explaining exactly what they did to work around the issue. And it's very surprising to me that of all the applications on Android, SoundClouds is the one that hit that limit, because you can barely do anything with the SoundCloud app these days compared to what it used to do. So it's pretty amusing for me to see that go up this week. So if you are interested in incredibly big Android apps, go read those blog posts.
And if I recall correctly, that's a limitation of Java, right?
It's the DEX file format which Android uses for its stuff. It is not Java-related directly. It's Dalvik-related.
Oh, I see.
Right. On episode 13, we had some follow-up about episode 6, and this is follow-up on follow-up.
meta-follow-up.
Yes, meta-follow-up. So on that episode, I brought up Pokemon Rumble World, which was a free-to-play game for the 3DS, which you could effectively play as much as you want once you'd purchased 3,000 gems. And last week, the news came out that Pokemon Rumble World is actually getting a boxed release in Japan for $40, which is about the maximum price you can pay for 3,000 gems if you use the most expensive option all the time. And what's interesting about that version is that all the in-app purchases are patched out of the game, and it comes with the 3,000 gems on, well, I guess it would be like on the default save on the cartridge, and you get a daily stream of 20 gems, making it effectively free unless you're an insane person who plays the game all day long every day. So that is interesting, because I think it's the first time a free-to-play game, aside from MMORPGs, but like a portable mobile game, has a boxed release under that kind of model, and it's kind of interesting to think about what the repercussions of that could be. And it's also going to be very interesting to see if it sells more that way than it got downloads. So interesting stuff to look forward to. Still no word on whether or not that's coming to North America. Right now it's Japan only. On episode 23, I complained about a whole lot of stuff during the Apple event.
You mean you're in grumpy, that's it.
Yeah, and one of the things that people maybe nudged me about on Twitter is my distrust of the on-device app store, which was basically a footnote. It wasn't even like a big point of that episode, but I mentioned in passing that it took me several years to trust the app store on the device.
We're back at that.
Yes, well, I have some news to mention about that. Maybe my distrust isn't so crazy after all, because after updating to iOS 9 on my iPad, the on-device app store completely broke and would refuse to work at all. So maybe I had reason to distrust the on-device app store. There was a fix to my issue, and it was not anything that I could do on iOS 9 or 9.0.1. It was to wait for iOS 9.0.2, which apparently patched whatever problem I was having. So thankfully, I don't have to use iTunes to deal with my apps anymore. I can just use the on-device app store, but all you people who made fun of me for not trusting the on-device app store, this is what I was worried about, and it happened. So there we go.
I'm still surprised that your level of trust was higher for iTunes than the on-device app store, but
honestly, these days, it's sort of inverted on its head because iTunes has gotten so terrible. But for that brief moment, I had to consider, well, do I care that all of my apps are out of date, or do I want to use iTunes? And the answer I took was, I'm just going to let all of these apps stay out of date until 9.0.2 comes out because I'm lazy. And last but not least, in my follow-up, last episode, I mentioned Twitch plays Dark Souls, and I forgot to mention a big change that took place because I forgot that it happened, and that is Twitch plays Dark Souls decided to switch to a patched version of Dark Souls where every second it would pause, then prompt the chat room for input, then take the most popular input as basically the most popular input that was put in the chat, and then it would execute that input and then pause again and basically loop like that. So it became a turn-based game as opposed to a real-time game, which made dodging enemies and all that stuff much simpler. That modification, though, allowed Twitch chat to beat Dark Souls in a little under 2 weeks, and they did so last week. And nobody thought they could do it, but they did. So that's nice. And that is all for my follow-up.
Good. So my follow-up isn't that much follow-up. It's just one of my typical side topic. I wanted to speak a little bit about my first impression of my new phone and iOS 9 and watchOS 2. And also, I heard that Yannick tried something over the weekend with my phone. So
you heard that I tried something with your phone.
Exactly. It's rumors, as far as I know. Mm. So, to be honest, first impression of iOS 9 are pretty straightforward. It's iOS 9. That's wow. Probably it. Much it.
Shocking.
Yeah, exactly. It's just... what can I say about it? Seriously, it's just a new update, at least as far as it is right now. I'm not complaining that much compared to the complaints I had with iOS 8 last year. Finger crossed that no more like patch update will break the iPhone or break Bluetooth and stuff like that. But it's pretty neat. It's incremental a bit, to be honest, though. Like, there's a lot of features that are neat, but I think most of the powerful features are still lacking because of third-party support. And we're starting to see some apps using them, and I'm pretty hyped about it.
We're also seeing apps that are not using them, like the new YouTube app, which is not only a giant phone app on the iPad, but also doesn't support split screen, doesn't support picture-in-picture.
It's now a giant phone app.
Nice meme, Google.
I hated the old version of it, but now that we have this one, I'm like, oh my goodness, Google.
Yeah.
So yeah, to be honest, though, I'm a little bit worried about watchOS 2.
Why is that?
It's not related to the feature of it. It's more related to the stability of it. I know that people were complaining about watchOS 1. It was not that stable. But I found that my watch was, like, as a whole, more stable with the old version. At least for now, it hasn't been reproduced. But 2 days last week, I had to just reboot my phone to make my watch see the phone. And the strange part of it is I'm using, like, unlocking your phone will unlock the watch. So I unlocked the watch maybe, like, 10 minutes before it happened with the phone, and everything was fine. So I'm still don't know why, but it never... those kind of, like, connection issues never happened beforehand. And also, at some point, the watch just crashed, which was kind of weird. And it's not unexpected because it happens once in a while with the iPhone and iOS. But it was my first time seeing it with the watch, so I was a little bit surprised. So maybe it's more like everything happened at the same time. Those stuff could happen with the old version of watchOS, but I've seen those for the first time with watchOS 2.
That's strange. I haven't really had any issues beyond the initial battery life thing on upgrade. So, I don't know. What worries me more about watchOS 2 is how there basically doesn't seem to have any support for it from third parties. I've seen very, very few applications updated for watchOS 2, and that worries me.
Yeah, I think the main one that they use is the Sworn app. And I would say that I see a difference, but it's easy to see a difference when everything was so sluggish.
Yeah. Beforehand.
So at least now I'm able to have refresh content around like 6 to 10 seconds after I open the app, which is still too long. Let's be honest. It's still way too long.
What I find strange about the Swarm app in particular is previously it would take forever to launch, but once it launched, it would already know my current location. Whereas now with Swarm, it launches, it shows me my old location, and then takes like 4 seconds, and then it shows me my current location. And the problem is, like, most of the times I'll just have the reflex of tapping the check-in button before it finished finding my current location, and it checks me into the old location that I was at like 2 days ago.
Yeah, exactly. And you still need to keep your like, you still need to be like, oh, no, that's the old location, I'm waiting. And if I recall correctly, you also see this, like, WatchOS spinner in the top, in the top right corner. That's it. Another thing I realized, speaking of spinners, I don't know if it's only me, but it feels to me that the spinner that you see when you're first opening a watch app is now off-centered. It's like, maybe like off-centered vertically.
That sounds correct.
And yeah, every time I see it, it's like, it feels off.
Actually, I think what the actual thing that's happening is it's centered on the screen, but because there's the text at the top, it looks off center relative to the bottom portion of the application. Because the status bar.
Yeah, that might be why. Good. So now that I have spoke about all of the iOS features. Seriously, the most important feature are my new phone. Yay! I received it finally! Yay! What can I say about the new phone? The new phone is fast. I love it that much. My main gripe about it is the fact that the phone is bigger now. Yeah. And it's... So I'm... Starting to getting used to using it with two hands in most occasions. I'm also starting to get the habit of using the double tap on the Touch ID
reachability.
To use the reachability feature, which I was forgetting its name. At first, it seemed weird, but now that it's way easier to use the phone with that feature, I kind of like it.
I never, ever use it. I would rather stretch than use that horrible feature that reminds me of a bad design decision that Apple made. I mean, both of them remind me of a bad design decision that Apple made, because it's a bad design decision, but I don't know. It's just gross. I don't want to do the reachability thing because it makes me feel bad, whereas stretching doesn't.
No, it feels less bad to me to double tap, but both of them feel bad. But I guess at this point, this just means that we need to give up on one-handed devices, and that's it. I know we did add a small discussion while you might have tried a 3D touch on my phone about the fact that even if the screen is bigger, both of us think that we don't see that much content compared to a 4-inch device.
Yeah, and I thought of this yesterday when I was reading Michael Tsai's blog. He was posting comparison screenshots of Tweetbot 4 and Tweetbot 3. And with the same size phone, there's more white space in Tweetbot 4 than there was in Tweetbot 3. And if you actually click on his link to the comparison between Tweetbot 2 and Tweetbot 3, we lost even more white space then. We gained even more white space then. So basically, Tweetbot 2 was incredibly information dense when we had 3.5 and 4-inch phones, but then we got 4.7 and 5.7,
if I recall correctly.
That sounds too big. I think it's like 5.5-inch. 5.5? Okay. Yeah. Phones last year. We're basically displaying the same amount of content. And yesterday, I kid you not, I was using my iPhone 6 and my 10-inch iPad, and on both of them, I was seeing 3 tweets at once.
Oh, my goodness.
And the reason I was seeing 3 tweets at once is because Tweetbot 4 will show you, by default, these huge image previews that take the entire width of the column it displays in. So there was this giant photo that was taking up like a third of my screen on my iPad. And I was seeing 3 tweets on the thing, and I was like, okay, maybe I need to turn this off and just like use small thumbnails and tap on it if it looks interesting. Because the entire point of having a big screen to display more information is just not happening here.
Yeah, and I think it comes back to some of our discussion we had in previous episode about the fact that some of us, I was developer, don't know, maybe are not able, still able to get the most out of those big devices. It seems to me that even we'd still have some reflex of just like, oh my god, we need to pack up so much stuff, and then forget that we have those big devices.
And I think that a lot of services like Twitter or Facebook, which have, I guess, they're trying to do richer previews of the content that previously used to just be a tappable link. And because of that, each item of content now occupies more real estate on screen. So relative to before, because everything is bigger, we're displaying the same amount of content as we did on 3.5-inch screens, which is what makes me angry because, like, I remember the good old days of the original Facebook app on iOS 2 where you had, like, basically 4 news feed posts per screenful, and now you're lucky if you have 2.
Yeah, exactly. But everybody loves images or videos. That's the gist of it, as far as I know. You know what? I still have another point, which is 3D Touch, but today I feel grumpy. We exchange weeks, but and that's strange because my topic is not that grumpy. So, oh well, I guess it's more related to the fact that we're speaking about
big phones,
weird stuff. Weird stuff about the phones. But I'll end on a good note. Uh-huh. I really enjoyed 3D Touch. I know that you were skeptical about it, and then you tried it, and you were still like, that's not that good. But I really enjoyed it. My brain still isn't wired properly to do the multitasking gesture. I'm still using the home button way much as I should, but I really, really, really love this new gesture. It makes swiping within apps so much faster, especially when you go back and forth from through apps.
The hilarious thing, though, is that when you tried to demo it to me last weekend, it failed on you like twice in a row. You couldn't do it twice in a row.
Which is crazy because right now I can do it like a boss, and I'm swiping through apps and it's pretty neat. But oh well. Related to 3D Touch though, I don't feel that I use the home screen shortcut that much. And I think the main reason is I tried it when the phone launched, and the only app that has it were the Apple ones, and most of them were pretty bad. Like, I think the only useful one are either A, the camera app, or B, go to your recent conversation on iMessage, and that's it. The rest is just bad.
Yeah.
And now that developers are starting to, obviously they don't want to jump on this feature right away. The right approach to do that is seriously think about what you want to put there, play with your own phone and make sure that the experience is great and then ship this feature. But the problem with that approach is you end up with people that's like, okay, it's nice, but there's not that much apps that supports it. So I will just continue opening apps and that's it. And then if you forget that this feature exists, because I'm sure it will happen for most people. Like, even if developers came with apps, at some point you might just trigger it by accident while trying to delete an app.
Yeah.
Because that's my... If I have a problem with 3D Touch, that's my only problem. Like, long presses conflicts with 3D Touches. And it's really hard to just... Like, in a way, it's just you lay your finger on the screen. And sometimes I feel that even putting your finger on the screen and just... applying no pressure, only gravity on your finger that press on the screen is too much. And I haven't tweaked the settings because that's the first thing you did. You tried the screen and then you were like, oh, that's too hard. And you went in accessibility to try the light setting.
Yeah. I have a question for you about 3D Touch and third-party apps. Do you think that companies like Twitter, Facebook, Google, like the big ones, do you think that they're going to bother with Peek and Pop in their apps?
That's a good question.
Because a lot of their apps They feel like they're trying to go for a consistent user interface across several platforms. Maybe not identical, but very closely related user interfaces. And I feel like they would shy away from introducing features that are platform exclusive like that. Or in the case of Facebook, I sent you a tweet this week, basically from a Facebook engineer, I think it was, that said, like, the best apps don't use UI view controller. And then we both, like, facepalmed into infinity.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah. I don't think we need to go into that. I need to go into that subject because, yeah.
That could be a whole episode.
Oh, yeah, it could be.
But, yeah, like, I'm wondering, like, do you think that those kinds of companies, the companies that basically everyone has their app on their phone, do you think that they're going to adopt Beacon Pop, or are they just going to not use it and then people will not care?
You know what? I think they will adopt it, but not this year. And the best example of that is Google. They will always adopt new feature on iOS, but they will never be the first one to adopt them.
No, it's like, what was it? Like, Chrome supported extensions on the browser, I think, like 6 months after the feature launch, I think.
Oh, I think it's even worse than that. I think they added, like, shared extension maybe like 3 months ago. Like, it was so close to the launch of iOS or the announcement of iOS 9 that it was, like, just funny at this point.
Yeah.
I think the update came maybe a month before DubDub. Something like that. Like, I think we'll have to check, but it was something as crazy as that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what will happen with the YouTube app we mentioned. I think both of us are waiting for a picture-in-picture update for this application, and sadly, I think it will come in 2020 with the Apple Car.
That would suck.
Yeah. So, yeah, to go back to your question, I think they will at some point in the future. I cannot tell you when. I won't try to tell you when. I don't know.
All right.
But I think a company like Facebook will be more inclined to adopt it because compared to, for example, Google, it feels to me that they have an advantage, but it feels to me that they are more proactive with new feature either on Android or iOS.
I don't know. Maybe in Messenger. But I wouldn't see it in the main Facebook app. And, like, Instagram belongs to Facebook now, and Instagram has it built in already because they were one of the launch partners.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, yeah, you're right. So, you see, like, maybe they would put it... It doesn't surprise me that, for example, Instagram has it already. And, like you just said, that the Facebook app might never get it.
Yeah, maybe if we look at, like, how the watchOS adoption has been working, like, Instagram was on watchOS on day one, and now we have Facebook Messenger, which came out on the watch today, and Facebook, the actual app, is nowhere to be seen, and hopefully never to be seen on watchOS, because I think the experience would be terrible, but, you know.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right.
All right, indeed. I think we took a little bit too much time, but oh well.
Well, you said you were worried your topic wouldn't cover enough time, so...
Yes and no. I was worried that yes, but now I'm worried that my small topic didn't take too much time, but that's fine.
Oh, well.
We always love to blabber about iOS.
Yes.
Yes. So, main topic. Seriously, today I want to talk about side projects, and this conversation about side projects started with a cup of coffee between Yannick and I. Once in a while, when I go back to Trois-Rivières, we do have our type of meetup, which I like to call Let's Meet Each Other at some random places in public. And funny enough, that's how this podcast started. So, we had one of those events, made fun of Yannick because he was wearing white pants. And yes, I said it again. Yes.
I hate you.
Oh, I love you too. But coming back to our main topic, I want it to be kind of not a follow-up episode, but maybe in the same vein as your episode about game development that we did while you were in Japan. But mine will be more general. I don't want to speak that much about the technology that I'm using or use in the past inside project, but knowing us, I'm sure we will. But it's more, I want it to be more general. I want to talk about stuff like what makes a good side project? What makes us a bad side project? And I want to answer those questions while referring back to some of my side projects that I made and that I completed in the past couple of years. So I want to separate this episode in three pillars. I want to start by talking about never completed side projects and the reason why they're never been completed. I want to talk about completed and current side projects, and I want to conclude on what makes a good one and how to make sure that you're able to complete, or if it's not something that can be complete but just maintain, how to make sure to properly maintain it. So let's start with my small, and hopefully, I hope it will stay small, but I'm sure it will grow in the future, my list of never completed side projects. And I want to start by saying that most of those side projects ideas happened while I was at school. And you'll see it will be a common theme on my side project. I'm forced to do programming for a reason. And I use the word forced because at school I was forced to do like .NET programming or web programming.
And the good old days.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously I wanted to do something that I will enjoy more than those. Not that I did not enjoy those programming environments. It's more like I need to go through my school diploma to work, so I have to do those. So all of those projects at that time were more around iOS because my interest, and my interest is still with iOS, but it's not something that was my main project. So I wanted to explore while using those side projects to do my exploration. So the first two ones are, the first one was a course management app for students. The main example of what was my idea is an app called iStudies Pro. And obviously, this app looks pretty nice. I haven't tried it because I was pretty sad when I decided to give up on that project, that I was just like, okay, I'm never using a management app for students. Like, I gave up the idea. I will never use one. Don't send me tweets about the fact that it's stupid. I know. But yes, the other example was, and this one was more a smaller idea. It was a GPS tracking app with export feature. And the main goal for that app was to start this app while I was snapping pictures. And then at the end, I could export it, put it in Aperture or any photo library software and to stamp the picture with the GPS data. And the funnier one is I always wanted to do like kind of a portfolio / personal website stuff, but this idea has always been like on the back burner. It's like, at some point I'll do it. I need one. The need for it is not that big, but it's always like, I need one, but I'm too lazy to do it. Now that I mentioned laziness, obviously, since those apps are not part of my portfolio and this website is not up, it's pretty clear at this moment that I gave up on those projects. And some of them I gave up on pretty fast. Some of them were at a pretty, not complete stage, but at an advanced stage. And there's two reasons why I gave up on them. And I'll start with the obvious one, lack of time. But lack of time is more related to the main point, I think, which is those side projects lacked focus. And in a way, they kind of lacked a good MVP, like a minimal viable product. And I use product not as a way to say like I wanted to make money or ship something, but just say I'm achieving a certain goal, I could exceed it, that's fine too, but at least I need to set a goal. And especially for those two iOS apps, I think my ideas and when I decided to jump on them, like everything was so mixed up. I had broad ideas and nothing was that focused. For the course app, like I had kind of data, I had kind of a database layer which was working because one day I wanted to work on the database layer, and then at some point I had a UI that was half working again because I wanted to do UI and UX and UX, and like each day when I had time to put on those side projects, I wanted to do something different. And since I was not able to structure those passion inside of those side projects, it ended up with half-baked stuff that was never working. And the best comparison I can do is recently one of my colleagues was showing me a picture of kind of a like a wood shack that is half made of bricks, half made of wood, half made of windows that are not broken, and it's kind of looking like it's sideways, like nothing is working properly, and that was happened with side projects. And for example, another example is for the GPS tracking app. The application by itself was pretty simple, but I was stubborn enough to say, you know what? Creating this app is too simple. What about if I create my own framework to handle GPX files? And that was the main problem. Like, I decided to do something that was too big for what was my goal. And what happened is I just gave up while trying to architect a framework that somebody already created, but I wanted to create my own version, which now steers this conversation about third party code in your code base, but I don't want to touch that.
Well, the other thing that it reminded me of is the good old days of the Ruby on Rails community and now the Node community, which basically everybody has to reinvent everything all the time just for the lulz because they feel like reinventing everything and they don't want to put their effort behind another person's library, or they just want to get a feel for the thing, so they reinvent everything, basically.
Yeah, and I remember my reasoning at that time was I did some research. At first, I didn't realize that there was an already existing third-party library that looks pretty good. And then I started thinking about it, maybe did some kind of prototyping of it, and then realized that there was one. But I was still stubborn and just like, no, I will continue working on mine. I'll be able to have mine maybe in a couple of weeks. That's going to be fine, wearing pink glasses, and life is good. And obviously, what happened is I never completed it.
Well, to share an anecdote about EOS development, EOS's GIF export engine originally was going to be written entirely by me. And what I quickly realized is that there were going to be a lot of bugs that I would have to fix in my own code in order to get it to actually work properly, and that would be a roadblock to actually shipping a product in time. So what I did, and of course there were a bunch of other issues that caused me to not ship EOS in time, but that's another story. So what I ended up doing is just saying, okay, well, I have this partially implemented GIF engine here that I can revisit for, let's say, 2.0 if I want to implement more advanced features. But instead, in the system frameworks, in the Image.io framework, there's a GIF engine that comes with the operating system that is perfectly competent. It's not able to do everything, but it's competent. And I just decided, okay, well, I'll take the API that I originally wrote and I'll just change the implementation to call the implementation of the GIF engine that the system has. And if I ever make an EOS 2.0, which right now is looking like no, I'll be able to just use that GIF engine that I started work on and actually put in the time to finish it and refine it instead of using the system one. So that's something you could have done for the GPX thing, is you could have put a layer between the API that you would have liked in your own GPX framework and the underlying third-party GPX framework, and eventually actually write your own.
Yeah, you're totally right. But I can tell you that at that time, Pasluko was not ready to do that in a way, if you see what I meant here. It's just like now it's easy to say like, oh, I should have done that. But at the same time, okay, maybe I'm a little bit too fast about that, but I'll say it. Like, I'm learning from what happened. and from what was bad with those ideas or the way I tried to explore those ideas. And even if I say they never completed, that's why I didn't say bad side project ideas. I just say never completed, because even if there were problems with them, I learned something from them. And that's the main goal why you want to do side projects. It's to learn something new. But I want to touch this part later on.
Yeah, definitely.
So now that you mentioned one anecdote about one of your apps, do you have any other maybe fail, never completed side projects you want to discuss about? Or maybe if you don't want to discuss about those, maybe you can share some reason why some of them have failed in the past.
I mean, because I've been working for myself for the past 5 years, it's hard to call anything a side project because almost everything is a main project because I work for myself, basically. So that's sort of a problem. Mitsuba is probably it's the only thing that I have canceled after it shipped. So technically it was completed and then I started work on 2.0 and then I canned that. And that was never really successful anyway. It was just like something I was doing for myself. So in a way, it's a sort of side project, but I won't lie. I was using my work time to actually work on the app because it was more interesting than working on anything else. As we've covered in our previous episode, Mitsuba was an application which let you check your Patsili balance if you're in Japan and want to play arcade games and want to know what your balance is on your e-amusement card. You could just run that app and it would tell you. And version 1.0 was very bare bones, and that's what allowed me to ship it. And 2.0 was way more ambitious, and it was maybe 80% of the way to being developed. And then I had to basically say, I should be spending my time on something that will actually sell instead of something I want to make, which is sad but true. And then I basically canned it. And I removed 1.0 from sale on the App Store when the Konami site broke a couple of months ago. And therefore, my scraper would stop working. So that's one thing. Let me see. Side projects.
So obviously, in episode 9, you didn't mention that this game you were creating with your friend was a side project.
Yeah. It's not to say that I'll never work on a game ever. But the problem is, she was basically doing all of the game design and she has other stuff to do for her schoolwork. So it's not happening.
Which brings me back to my point where I gave up on some side project while I was in school.
It's school.
Lack of time.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's cool.
And I don't have anything against her for doing that. I mean, I'm perfectly understanding of the situation. I would be fully open to actually develop the thing if someone was there to actually do the rest of the work, but I don't think I'm a very good game designer. Let's see. I've been toying around with the idea of doing a personal blog for several months now. The problem is I am a picky asshole and I dislike all blog software. And of course, the logical solution to this is, well, write your own goddamn blog software. The problem is, that doesn't sound like a very good way to use my time, so I'm not doing it. So instead, I have no blog, which is what you can see right now.
Oh, but you kind of have a blog, which is
posting
more
static HTML pages to my website and linking people to them on Twitter.
Which we can say it's a blog.
There's no RSS feed. I don't call that a blog.
Okay, but that's an easy fix, to be honest. But yeah, okay, good.
Well, I'd have to manually write the RSS feed myself.
So from what I hear from those past side projects, the main reason why they fail is either lack of interest on them and obviously lack of time.
Well, okay, I just thought of something. I had a library for jailbroken iPhones called Frostbite, which was immensely popular in a sort of weird way because I had created a beta version of it and I had invited 10 people to the beta and then it leaked on the internet and everybody downloaded it and I still get emails to this day about it. I never released an official version because it was during college, so I ran out of time to actually maintain it. But people kept installing it until it inevitably broke. And Frostbite was basically this thing that allowed you to take I don't know if you remember, but previously on iOS, when you plugged it into power, the screen on the lock screen would go completely black and you would have a glowing green battery showing you your current charge level.
Yep.
And basically what my extension did is it allowed you to customize attributes of that screen. It was possible via frameworks like Winterboard to customize the actual image of the battery. But the problem is there was a forced reflection that was generated by the code that wasn't shut off by that. So if you were doing something that was flat and you didn't want the reflection there because it didn't fit with the art style, you couldn't turn that off. Frostbite allowed you to turn that off. It also allowed you to make the background not black but transparent, which a lot of people liked. And it was a lot of little customization options like that. And yeah, it became immensely popular in the customization community. The problem is I never intended it to actually go out to more than 10 people, which that wasn't my fault.
Yeah, the leaking is bad, and sadly it happens, though.
Yeah.
Good. You know what? Let's continue, and I have a point that I want to go back with you when we will talk about what makes a good side project, and I think you touched a little bit on it, is as an indie, everything kind of becomes blurred, and I think I want to talk more about that.
Yeah.
But now, completed and current side projects. So my first side project that has been like upgraded to kind of a, not a main project, but something that brings money back home was my first iOS jailbreak tweak, which was called a silent mode switcher. This is still out, but it's mostly in a maintenance mode, and put maintenance in quotes because yeah, I haven't updated it in a while and I don't plan to update it in a while. So if you're one of my lucky customer, you kind of know that I won't update it. So don't send me an email about iOS 9. If iOS 9 jailbreak comes out, I won't update it. And I'm tinkering with the idea of maybe removing from the CDS store, but I think that will be part of another episode. So just to give you an idea of what silent mode switcher does, it's a pretty simple tweak that lets you toggle the silent mode on the iPhone only via software triggers. And what I mean by software triggers is either swipe gesture, OS events. The main example is when you plug in the phone or unplug the phone. And obviously what happened is at that time my 3GS silent switch broke. And that's nice when your phone is ringing in the middle of a class and you forgot to turn the volume down. Yeah, it makes for funny moments. So the small tweak were injecting itself in the OS and was trying to disable all of the events that it was disabling the events that the switch send, and I was faking those events while you were doing those software triggers. So it was pretty useful for me because sometimes my switch was starting to work and switching randomly from silent to not silent in maybe like 1 minute. So that was kind of strange. And now related to current side projects, obviously I'm the maintainer of this beloved podcast, and I mentioned that in past episode that this podcast website is maintained on some workflows that I created on my iPad, which maintaining this website is also part of starting to do more work, quote unquote, on my iPad. I'm starting to learn how can I do some code on the iPad and be more efficient at using my iPad, not only to consume media, which is a big subject we tackled a lot in the past. Also, recently I started to be part of my local Cocoaheads organization, and yet again I decided to be the maintainer of the website. So we do have another website that I need to migrate from. I don't remember what was the old architecture. I think it's some kind of Heroku app, but never mind. So we decided to migrate to a web app with the database to static file based website, which is another interesting project I'm still working on. And that's mostly it for current or completed side projects. Now to the main part of this topic is what makes a good side project. And the main reason why I wanted to give example of my personal side projects is I wanted to see what was the problem that I faced with failed or never completed. Let's put it that way. What I learned from those and what happened, what made those side projects never complete, and compare them with the one I'm currently maintaining and the one I have completed. So we could call this section how to decide what to tackle as a side project, and I will go on with some points. Obviously, the main point, and I mentioned it a lot during the week, this episode, is a side project is a good place to learn something new. And the main example of that is I'm kind of learning web programming, because even if I do it in college, I was not that good at it. And now I'm learning new stuff. And like Yannick mentioned in this episode, there's always new shit for web programming.
Yeah. we also talked about that a little bit this weekend, but I'm going to save everyone the pain of having to listen to me complain about modern JavaScript.
No, right. But even then, maybe if we go into that a little bit. And
do we really want to?
You'll see. Just follow me on that. So what I want to say about that is I think what happens when I do web-based side project is I always start them maybe like a year or two after the new shit has come out. So maybe a while ago, I've decided to take a look at what is Node.js. And I looked at it, I started to see that there were some framework, and I started to realize that, yes, there's a bunch of framework, but now people are recommending like this if you want to do that, that other framework if you want to do X. And if you wait just a bit, you start to see that even in this big jungle of JavaScript frameworks, there's a couple of them that just grows out of it, and they become the temple of the problem they're solving.
Oh, definitely. But my argument isn't so much on the server side of things, where Node.js is literally history repeated over again, because everything that happened in Node.js happened already with Ruby on Rails.
No, you're totally right.
In many cases, it's the same people that are involved with the repeating of history on the Node.js side of stuff. So just like how at a certain point, Rails and the Ruby community reached a point of maturity where it became less easy to make the joke that it was a giant mess.
Fail whale.
Yeah, Node.js is pretty much at that point right now. What really bothers me about the modern web is how we have these incredibly thick frameworks on the client side, stuff like Angular and all that stuff, that ultimately, especially when we're dealing with mobile devices, and now we bring up the whole ad blocker bullshit. I try to keep a very minimalist approach to JavaScript in our websites. You can see this if you go to Polyphonic Room. You can see this if you go to, I don't even know if we have JavaScript on the Limitless Possibilities site, actually. I don't think we do.
I don't think we do. No.
Yeah. So the thing is, if you don't need JavaScript, don't use JavaScript. The problem is, modern web development is basically jam JavaScript into all the things as much as possible until it's overflowing with so much JavaScript that there is little JavaScript froth all over the cover of the website. And that is sort of disturbing to me, because JavaScript is very useful if used in moderation, but when your website depends entirely on JavaScript, and Polyphonic Room is guilty of this as well, but I am working to change that. When your entire website relies on JavaScript and the JavaScript is larger than what it would have cost to just bring a static web page with the same information down, which is not the case for Polyphonic Room, which is why I do it that way, because it was meant to be a mobile-first website. And thinking mobile-first, I thought, well, if I can actually generate the templates on the client side, it saves a lot of bandwidth and it can be even faster on mobile devices. And that has paid off quite well, except that now nothing on Polyphonic Room actually ranks on Google because there are no links on the page when Google goes to index, which is, whoops, a little problem. But that's like the main reason I want to fix it. But like, JavaScript is not, it should not be the first thing that comes to mind when you think of web development. It should be, yeah, I've got my markup done right. And yeah, I have all of my information displayed on the page. And JavaScript should enrich that instead of being the entire website, which is what I find problematic.
Yeah. And while you were speaking about all of the JavaScript side, client side problem, it also rings a bell about my thinking about web programming is like when I want to do those, I hopefully want to stay as static file based as possible. Like I know how database works, but the problem is databases are complex, especially in a web service. So if I'm able to have something bare bone as I can have, I'll do it. And I think what happens is with all of those JavaScript frameworks, either server side or client side, they bring you more power and then you can rely less on databases, server database relationship. And yeah, that's another topic. I don't want to go that far on it. I just wanted to say that learn something new and that's why I like so much. And obviously what I meant by learn something new is also getting out of your comfort zone. And that's what I did. And you might learn something you did not expect. For example, you can code on an iPad. You can do shit on an iPad, which is not only listening and watching Netflix.
It's true.
Good. The other point is, which is like really related to learn something new, is playing with something that you don't use during your day job. It's related to a point that like it's related to one of my goals of the last side project I mentioned is. I use the expression of getting, I don't want to get burned out of main projects is obviously because of business cases in jobs, you'll end up sometimes doing repetitive work. And I don't mean repetitive coding, but sometimes you'll need to code this UI. Obviously different UI, different problem, but at the same time, you'll still end up playing with mostly the same classes in UI kit. Side projects is a good place where you say, hey, I want to learn how the Spotlight API works and we don't have plans to use it at work for the next couple of months. So what about I make an app that uses it? And the last point, which is more related to why I'm having more web-based project these days, is I want to play with new problems and find new solution on problems that I don't encounter in my day-to-day job. Because obviously, if we generalize a bit, if you're working on web apps, if you're working on mobile apps, some problems are kind of equal. You want your user to have a good user experience that is maybe depends on your business cases, but it might be the same on both platforms. It might be optimized for one, it might be optimized for both. You want one to be optimized for native stuff and one, but if you get out of your comfort zone, you might find new problems that, yes, people have solved. I understand that. But you want to just stimulate yourself and find new solution and just use your brain for something else you've not used to use your brain for. And last point, which is more related to when you want to put a goal on your side project, is not put time constraint on your goal, but just make sure that the goal you decide to do is feasible in the time constraint that you have set for yourself. So for example, you have one day off, you want to work on one of your side projects. Let's be sure that you have a goal that is feasible for this day, for example. And by doing so, I found out that, it makes my side project more, interesting to do. And also it makes sure that I don't give up on them in the long run, because every time I work on them, at the end of my quote unquote work period, I have something new with it. And I have this feeling of just saying like, yep, I realized something today. That's good. And I don't end up saying like, I'm still having issues with that problem. That might be true, but every time that I work on it, I don't want it to be, it doesn't work. I need to fix that. It's more like a couple of times you have something you realize and that feels good. Which brings me back to the last part I wanted to talk to you about. How to properly manage side project, main projects, when some of them could be your day-to-day work and some of them could just be side projects.
Yeah.
Oh. So your reply to how to do that is, yeah?
Do I look like I figured that out?
I don't know. Care to comment on that then?
Not really.
Okay, then. That was it for me.
I don't know.
No, but like when I ask you about some never completed side project, you mentioned some side project that has started as side project that end up being quote unquote main projects for you.
Well, I was only treating them as main projects because that was what I wanted to be spending my time on. But at the same time, it was not getting any sales traction, so I shouldn't have been treating it as a main project. I should have been keeping it for like a weekend thing. I forgot to mention, I have another app in the App Store. It's not a new one. It's one that I made literally in a weekend, and it's called Telebitter, and I use it quite a bit because the iPad is 4x3, and when I watch anime on the iPad, I want to post screenshots to Twitter, but they're all 16:9, and I got tired of manually going in and cropping them to 16:9 all the time. So I made an app that automatically grabs the latest screenshot and crops it to 16:9 and automatically pops up a Twitter share sheet with the screenshot embedded, so that that way I can just use the four-finger swipe between apps and just swipe in when I want to share a screenshot, and that is really, really fun because it saves me a lot of time when I'm watching anime. I have sold like one or two copies of that app ever. But for me and the other person who uses it, it is an immense time saver, and that is a side project that got as much attention as it should have. The last version update that it got was when iOS 7 came out, because I wanted it to use the new controls, the new control style. I was using a library at the time that made it look iOS 7 controls on iOS 6, and then when iOS 7 actually shipped, my controls looked weird, so I had to adapt it to use the new UI. But that is literally the only update that app has ever gotten, and I might make another update just so that I can use SlideOver to do the same thing instead of having to switch apps, but that is literally all I care about with that app. That is probably the closest thing I have to an actual side project trademark in my arsenal right now. Otherwise, it's stuff like this podcast, which is technically a side project, I would imagine. I mean, we're not making money off of it.
Nope. And we'll have I don't want to spoil anything, but we will have a great milestone in 2 weeks. So,
yes.
You'll see in 2 weeks.
We're not introducing sponsors. Don't worry.
I thought the list of people I need to thank was for. Oh, wait. Oh, crap. I shouldn't say that then.
We'd like to thank Squarespace. No,
No, it's more people like you mentioned in the Twitch streams.
Yeah. Polyphonic Room is technically a side project, but that is more of investing time into helping the music gaming community project than it is a coding project of sorts. And that's, I mean, it's still valid in my opinion, because it's still trying to do something that is not my day job, really. I would like to maybe do another podcast. I don't know.
Ooh, spoiler.
Yeah. The problem is, like, it would be incredibly boring if it was just me talking to myself. So I would have to get, like, some rotating panel of guests or something.
And you know what? I'm guessing that's the kind of podcast that I don't want to be on each episode.
Maybe. So, yeah, I don't know. I have a bunch of ideas for stuff that I could do. But again, the thing is time. What is it? And I'm juggling enough projects as is. Well, less so now, but I was juggling more projects, and it was getting to be quite a handful, so I had to put some on the back burner. Now I have a lot more free time because I canceled all my main projects, so we will see what happens.
Yeah, but like you mentioned, you still have EOS, which is still some of your main projects, and you do have some jailbreak tweaks that are still going on. So I wouldn't say that you cancel everything.
I canceled everything I was working on to release this fall. Let's just say that.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah, right.
Yeah.
Good. So, yep. I think Yannick touched a good point. Like I mentioned, the time is the problem, and then obviously make sure that you learn something. That's what I can tell you, kids. And that's it.
All right. So, as the creative team mentioned, in 2 weeks, it will be our 1 year anniversary show.
Woo! Ah! Wow. I'm nice. Nearly falling. Yeah, I'm nearly falling off my chair. So, I'm so happy about the 1 year. Woo!
Okay. It took us maybe 2 years to actually make the podcast a reality because we had been toying around with the idea for quite a while.
Oh, my goodness.
So, it's actually pretty funny to see that it actually lasted minimum of a year.
Yeah, it was funny because at some point, I'm sure that at some point we were either texting each other. Oh, I was texting you like, are we starting this week? Oh, no, next week. Oh, no, I don't have time this week. No, next week. And I think it happened for maybe like a couple of months that I did that, or we did that to each other. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be my episode, so who knows what the topic will be next week, next episode.
It would be pretty funny that we hyped this episode so much and we just never do it.
It's going to be the greatest episode of any podcast in history. Stay tuned.
Oh my God. I think I need to close Skype now that you said that.
Our podcast episode is going to have its own Super Bowl commercial. So stay tuned. It's going to be so hype.
You know what? I wouldn't mind if you're paying for the Super Bowl ad.
Do I look like I have the money for that?
That's what I thought.
Anyway, you can find the show notes for this episode at limitlesspossibility.net/25, or you can find all of our episodes at limitlesspossibility.net, which has no JavaScript, apparently.
Yep, and if you find any mistake or something that doesn't work, you have somebody to blame now.
Yeah, and you can send those mistakes to @limipo_podcast on Twitter. That's limipo_podcast.
Or you can email Yannick. You can always
email Yannick. Please, no email. I don't believe in email.
No, you can email Yannick.
Hell no. You can find me on Twitter, myself, @Sakurina. That's Sakurina. And you can find
Lucas. No. What? Or you can find yourself in your personal email inbox.
Hell no.
And yes, you can find myself on Twitter at Lukonosh. That's LucconouChe.
If you're an old geezer who uses email, please stop using email for the better of humanity. I think that's about it, right? Yeah. Yeah. We'll see you in 2 weeks on our 1 year anniversary. Woo!
See you in 2 weeks.